Can you say sweep? Yes, the Mets sweep the Pittsburgh Pirates, playing good baseball. And Francisco Lindor is still not even hitting, but it doesn't matter because the pitching has been fantastic. Harrison Bader, he's unbelievable. Ever since I said that guy sucks, he's proved me wrong. That and so much more to talk about, along with the prospect report on this episode of the Mets Stub Podcast. Yeah, sweep. How about those Mets? How about those New York Mets sweeping the big, bad, hot Pittsburgh Pirates? They came into Citi Field. They had leads. They lost them. The bullpen was blowing games, coming back late. Harrison Bader, Brandon Nimmo getting some hits. The boys were rolling. The pitching looked good. So many good things to talk about with this previous series against the Pirates. James, before we get going into it, though, what country are you in? Where are you now in the world?
I'm in Spain, south of Spain, Punta Umbria, in a lovely apartment, a couple minutes away from the beach. It's been a wonderful few days, but that mixed in with the Mets sweep, the first Mets sweep in almost a full calendar year. Do you remember the last time the Mets swept a series?
Okay, so almost a full calendar year. I don't. I'm going to be honest, last season didn't exist. It's no longer in my brain. It's gone.
This was one of the last fun times we had. It was May into June sweeping the Phillies before they got hot again. Mets sweep. Love sweeping teams from Pennsylvania, though. This team is light years ahead of where they were 2 weeks ago. They're 10-3 in their last 13 games after starting the season 0-5. Gary dropped it on the broadcast today. They're only the fifth team in the history of baseball to get over 500 in their first 17 games after starting 0-5.
Whoa.
And another team that did that, a team that has eerie similarities to this Mets team, the 2005 Mets, first year of Carlos Beltran, the first year of Willie Randolph, team started 0-5, and they went a big streak in April. They wound up having a fine season, not a great season, a season that might have gotten them into an expanded playoff field, but it was a precursor to a very, very good Mets run. Relatively good Mets run. Teams over 500 multiple years in a row, which for the Mets is very, very important, very big. But this is fucking awesome. 7 comeback wins in the last 10 wins. The Pirates scored first in every single game this series, and the Mets wouldn't quit. They came back in every single one. Just awesome being at the park. I kind of miss being at the park this week. This Mets team is fun as fuck right now, and I can't get away from it.
Yeah, Citi Field was not particularly packed for any of the games, but the vibes were up. Like, everybody was feeling good. They were playing I'm Just Ken on the scoreboard, getting people excited about that stuff that people for some reason care about when they go to a baseball game. But actual play on the field, like, I was there for Monday and Wednesday. So I was there for the starter and the ender. Because we know how the Mets run series. Normally, that's the one you win, and you lose the middle game. I thought, okay, Tuesday, Jared Jones on the mound, they're going to lose. But even with him on the mound, they didn't touch him. But they got to that Pirates bullpen, who struggled mightily in this series, which was always going to be a huge question mark for them, was going to be that bullpen. But it was nice to see that the guys on the team, because again, Lindor, relatively still not hitting. McNeil, still really not hitting. Brandon Nimmo, I know, had some RBIs in these games, but still really not hitting. Alvarez is slumping, and yet they're still scoring a bunch of runs because the bottom of the order, guys like Harrison Bader getting stuff done, Brett Beatty getting a couple big hits, DJ Stewart big hits. Everybody is chipping in. This team is playing loose. They're playing fun. It's like they realize that baseball is a fun game that they get paid millions of dollars to play. I don't know what happened between that 0-5 start to now, but this team feels, looks, everything is just so much different. The vibes are way up.
I dropped a tweet after the game today because the Mets are kind of the talk of the league right now. We're the hottest team in baseball, and there's no doubt about it. I think as much as everybody wants to kill the Mets, now whenever the Mets are good, people do like to discuss it and chime in. Mets are the hottest team in baseball. Francisco Lindor's OPS is 478. Jeff McNeil's OPS is 655. Edwin Diaz is throwing 95 miles an hour. Francisco Alvarez has 5 hits in the Mets' last 10 games. Cordell Sanga hasn't pitched. JD Martinez hasn't hit. And Christian Scott, who we're going to talk about later, is still in the minor leagues. Probably the best healthy pitcher in the entire organization. He's still pitching in the minor leagues. But like, all these things are happening, and like, the Mets are over 500 after an 0-5 start. And you're like, oh, there's actually some real ceiling on this team. Like, there are some dogs that haven't dogged yet, and things could very much happen to make this a fun summer. It's still the middle of April. We're still just beating up on bad teams between the Royals and the Pirates. A lot of people are dropping.
Fine.
Totally. A lot of people are dropping stats, though. Like, the Mets are beating this. This is the record against teams over 500. That's bullshit in April.
Yeah.
That's bullshit in April. The Reds might not be good. The Royals are probably definitely not good. And the Pirates are also probably definitely not good. But you still have to play who's on your schedule, and you have to beat who's on your schedule. That's very important. And it did take a series from the Braves. Still took a series from the Braves. So now, all of a sudden, you just look at this team, and you're beating teams you're supposed to. And Thursday, the day you guys are probably listening to the show, this is the Mets' first scheduled off day of the season.
Breathe.
We've had a... we've had a couple cheapies with the rain out, especially that one last week in Atlanta. I think that helped his pitching staff a lot heading into this really torrid win streak since that unscheduled off day. But it has not been easy go of it so far, despite some of our opponents being relatively easy. So just the way this team has battled, the vibes, mentality they've played with, the bottom of the order, the relievers, the starters, like everything that we weren't really expecting to carry this team has carried them. And that's the mark of a good team. And it's kind of like we talk about that with pitchers on like a one game basis where like you won without your best stuff. This Mets whole team this season right now is technically winning without their best stuff. Lindor, Nimmo, Alvarez, no, they're not hitting. McNeil's not hitting. Pete's been really good, but this series, go-ahead hits were Harrison Bader, Joey Wendell, and then Wednesday, Marte had technically the go-ahead home run, but it was still a one-run game until Tyrone Taylor's the one that got the single to do it. Like, these are the guys making the big plays right now. It's not who you expected, and that makes me feel really good about the future of this team.
Yeah, as we know, if you guys have been following me on my personal Instagram, GiraffeNeckMark, I won't say, I'm not saying it. I will not say it. That four-letter word about the New York Mets, not going to do it, won't say it all year long, but you know what I'm thinking. This team is playing baseball that is rivaling that of teams towards the top of the league right now. The pitching has been great. The offense has picked it up when we need it, like you said, and there are just so many good things to talk about. So let's go ahead, get started going into some of these games here. Game one in the ballpark. Shout out Clay, Jeff McKitts, legend, friend of the podcast. Got some tickets. He was like, $25, you want to go to the game? I was like, let's do it. Let's ride. We got great seats sitting at the game. Gamecock alumni as well. And it started off a little bit weird because, again, Adrian Hauser on the mound. He pitched well, but he also didn't because he walked five guys, but he struck out five guys, limited the damage. I think really only gave up one hit. The walks are a problem. You can't walk this Pirates team, which, let's be honest, when you look at this lineup, a lot of holes in it, not a lot of hitters that you're scared of. Brian Reynolds is probably the best one, and even this series, really unimpressed with the at-bats that he took, a lot of just like cheap flares here and there from Brian Reynolds. But he grinded it out, and that's kind of been this Mets team during this hot streak, grinding it out. And that's a bit of a that's what David Stern's teams have done in the past as well. Like in Milwaukee, when you look at those teams, they don't win in a pretty way. They don't win in a fun way, but they end up getting the wins. And it felt with Adrian Hauser on the mound like a Milwaukee Brewers beating the Pittsburgh Pirates game.
Really did. Our friend of the program, Michael Marino, tweeted during the game on Wednesday, this Mets team just feels like a David Stearns team. Like his fingerprints are all over this roster and you could feel it. And Hauser's a big part of that just from being a Brewer so long. It's probably why we just like associate all of this. But definitely. I love watching Adrian Hauser versus bad teams because it's just I tweeted as a joke from the Mets up account. Like when I was dozing off to sleep, like very wine drunk in Spain, I just put up a video of Pedro Martinez I had saved on my phone. It was like a meme where he plays these bad teams and he just looks amazing. He gets into trouble, he gets out of it. Also, so cool that he was faced up with Martin Perez because, like, I just love watching two dudes with nothing just manipulate sinkers and cutters around the edges and just trade zeros. Like, this was old school ball. Like, this is how every single game probably felt in the 80s, where you just light toss at 92 for six innings, seven innings, 120 pitches. Not that exactly, but old school ball. And then just little one thing that's not that cool. Francisco Lindor looked ridiculously comfortable again as a right-handed hitter against Martin Perez. I think he went 2 for 2 off him. The ball's pretty hard. Got a couple hits. So that's something in there. But again, these guys traded zeros for five innings. Like this was a game that was just, it looked like a good old-fashioned, like I said, pitcher's duel, but it wasn't really a pitcher's duel. And then sixth inning, Hauser got into trouble. Drew Smith could not get him out of it, but Drew Smith still looks good. I'm going to talk about Drew Smith later. It's just the third time around the order. Like, we know this. Third time around the order for Adrian Hauser. Like, it's probably not going to go well. And then this Mets team is down 3-0 to the Pirates late. And you're like, ah, crap. Maybe this isn't good, but wrong. Wrong.
Incorrect.
Totally fine.
Alvarez, McNeil, and then the king himself, DJ Stewart, coming off the bench, making it almost impossible to send him down. I genuinely... How do you send down a guy who's got 900 OPS right now? You can't do it. And in terms of the left-handed bats on the bench, Zach Short, great story, all that stuff. He's the guy that's got to go down whenever JD Martinez decides he wants to play baseball. Because, if he ever plays baseball for the New York Mets. Because you can't send down DJ Stewart. Zach Short, for all those purposes, talk about Harrison Bader having a pool noodle at the plate that I said a couple weeks ago, which we got to find out exactly when and get the stats from when I said that. But Zach Short's got nothing at the plate. DJ Stewart, while he can't play anywhere in the infield, still a good bat. We saw it in that game. Got a huge hit. Got a hit later in the game when they left him in at the DH spot against the lefty, which continued the rally on in that inning. Just really good pieces of hitting from this team. the approach that looked so lost in those first five games of the season, now you're starting to see it really come together where their patience is paying off and they're aggressive at the right pitches.
Remember I told you the approach wasn't actually that bad. It was just narrative stuff. And the stats actually said the Mets approach was totally fine, in line with other good hitting teams in the league. And now we're kind of seeing that all the Mets' bad luck from that first week has turned into good luck. Remarkably good luck, I will say. Like really this, the Severino start from Wednesday jumping around, it felt like that was the give back from the baseball gods from getting BABIP to hell that first Saturday of the year, where today the Pirates put tons of balls in play and Severino walked tons of guys, but nothing came back to bite him. And he got the big outs when he needed them. But again, now back to Monday. This was also the inning that this rally where this Recanto Joe just spiked the ball, like made a little play. He was in between the cutoff and throwing the ball all the way home. And this was as a lot of people, I feel like, were giving Connor Joe a lot of credit, because Connor Joe, every single April, for some reason, told you guys on Monday, just goes ballistic every single April. Everyone picks him up at fantasy, and then he dies for the whole rest of the year. People are like, oh, Connor Joe. I even think that Gary, Keith, and Ron were talking about him. Then they were like, that's not a good play from Connor Joe. And you saw his face. If you guys were watching the game, saw the replay at home, the second the ball left his hand, he was like, oh, no. Like, he knew, very much knew he'd fucked up. But another cool thing about this inning, the DJ Stewart, big DJ Stewart hit. Will Salmon had a great piece on The Athletic on Tuesday after this game about just the feel with Carlos Mendoza and the fact that how loose he has been. Not necessarily comparing him to Buck Showalter. We've kind of seen a lot of people in Mets world kind of allude to the differences in this clubhouse, in this dugout. We've done it more directly because we did not like Buck Showalter.
It's true. We
thought he kept his team very tight and they weren't having any fun because he was just like a geriatric with no joints, like sitting in a dugout motionless. But you're feeling Mendoza do it. And this talked about an anecdote with Mendoza and Stewart, where Stewart was 0-for-12. And Mendoza he literally kept saying to him, just smile. Because Stewart was stressed, which is corny as fuck. But like, I bet it probably helps professional athletes where Stewart was stressed that he has a family now. He said he didn't really want to move his family out of New York anymore. He said they had a place there. They were comfortable. Like going back to Syracuse, like he'd be away from his family for probably an extended period of time. Maybe they'd come with him, maybe they wouldn't. It was all stress for him, which I'm sure was really stressful when they signed J.D. Martinez before the season. I'm sure that was a fucking horrible blow for the Stewart household. That sucks. But he stuck with him and he's been playing well ever since. And just about all these little tiny decisions that Mendoza's making late in games are kind of more gut related than numbers related. Leaving Stewart in that Braves game, the Harrison Bader at bat against the Royals last Sunday. Like all these things are probably not things where the analytics are telling him to do something, but he's just saying, I'm feeling it, so I'm doing it. And that's the kind of thing where if those decisions work, you get all the credit in the world, and everybody has a think piece this week on Carlos Mendoza trusting his gut and leading the way for the Mets. If those decisions do not work, everyone's like, Carlos Mendoza, why aren't you trusting the numbers? But it's at least like proof that while everyone thinks like David Stern is a magician pulling the strings, and we love David Stern in the show, we always will, it's clear that Mendoza has a lot of autonomy with this team and that he's the manager who's managing, and the front office is just simply front officing, which I think is probably the best way to handle baseball, because baseball is so stupid and chaotic and most of this game is luck anyway. So you might as well just let the guys in the dugout just kind of vibe out. Like sometimes if you make the decision that the numbers say is wrong, you can still just get lucky and it be right. And not even get lucky, just it works out. That's kind of the beauty of baseball. And I think the Mets are leaning into that in a really good way so far.
One thing that they did in this game too that I love, the Mets finally started running on the base paths. Aroldis Chapman came into the game. Again, couldn't happen to a better guy. In case you guys didn't know, Aroldis Chapman fired a gun to intimidate his wife because he's that good of a guy. It's so good. But Aroldis Chapman comes into the game, blows it instantly. Boom, game over. He can't stop the bleeding. He can't stop the run scoring. He was too busy thinking about groping his mom again on Instagram instead of actually trying to get outs. But they started running on him because Aroldis Chapman takes forever to get to the plate. He takes forever. And old Mets teams, I don't think, run in these scenarios. I think Jeff McNeil stole third base. Francisco Alvarez stole a base in game three of the series. Like, that doesn't happen. They started running all over this team. And I love to see it. And apparently, I didn't see this again because I was at the game, but my dad was texting me that Mendoza was in the dugout freaking out. He was pumped. He was like, yeah, like, let's go. And I think those are the kind of vibes that you can see with this team. McNeil gets a big hit. You see Francisco Lindor on the top step of the dugout screaming, yelling. Brett Beatty's doing the humping thing now. After the game, I don't know if they catch this on TV on SNY, but all the Mets, the Mets infielders meet, and they do a little hump. They do a little hump with each other. Like, we know Buck did not like the humping. That was something he made a big deal about on the fucking Michael Kay show or whatever he was talking about cursing. Like, these are the kind of vibes that it seems like has allowed this team to relax, play well. They know they're Major League Baseball players. They know they're good Major League Baseball players. And you see it in the performance. Even going to the bullpen, Ottavino against lefties terrifies the hell out of me. I couldn't believe that he was facing Sawinski and Rowdy Tellez in an inning. but it worked. And I think like almost when the manager gives you that stamp of approval in a way, like, no, this is your inning. This is the outs that you're going to get. Go and get him. There might be something to that because he looked phenomenal in the eighth inning, Ottavino.
Ottavino's been statistically one of the best relievers in baseball this year. He's running almost a 50% strikeout rate. I think it's 48 point something. It's the fourth highest in the league as of play Wednesday. I tweeted it out because as of Wednesday, Reed Garrett had the highest strikeout rate for any reliever in the league. Good. And Adam Ottavino was fourth. And Adam Ottavino, the biggest thing for him, he had not allowed a walk yet this season. Wow. No walks for Adam Ottavino. And the thing he's doing is something that he was doing his whole career that he went away from last year for some reason. Now he's back to. He's just throwing that sweeper slider every single pitch.
Yeah, that's just do it.
He's just daring the lefties to hit it. And he threw a really bad one to Riley Green, but now he's been like really flipping that thing more and burying it, not leaving him over the middle of the plate, which again, this will come back. Adam Ottavino is going to give up another home run this year to a lefty, but when it's good, it's good. And right now he's so good because he's just throwing these pitches in the strike zone. He's daring people to hit it. But the Salmon article also talked about the double steal and that Mendoza put that on. It was something he was excited to do. Something specifically, they look for the matchup. They're like, we know we can run on Chapman. I think Alvarez is even on first base, but when McNeil stole third.
Might have been, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't remember who was on first base, but it's just amazing. Also, something funny with this game. Back to back days, we took the lead off relief pitcher named Stratton.
Yeah.
Bizarre. Kristen Hunter. Yeah.
I think no relation either.
Even weirder. But Harrison Bader had the big hit off Chapman. Wouldn't could never give up that lead. Edwin Diaz is throwing 95 just to give people a chance.
Yeah, where were you when Harrison Bader hit his first extra base hit as a New York Met? Because I was there. I got to see it land on the line. I was talking to McKitts, Clay, and I was like, is this a tweet? Is this a tweet if Harrison Bader does X, I'm going to do Y? I almost thought about it. Thank goodness I didn't because I would have had a third child named Harrison.
I thought you so missed an opportunity with your tweet, the Drew Smith tweet on Wednesday. As we move into Wednesday's game.
Which was what?
We made a good TikTok. This was like the first TikTok I really like made that was like deep and dense with some production. It's done really well. Like 120 views on Instagram. So it's amazing. Shout out any new listeners that are coming from Instagram because we
had good edit, by the way, because I could not visualize what you were talking about when you were explaining it to me.
But it worked. It looked pretty good. People fucking love it. We've got 250 followers from it. I think it's been shared like thousands of times.
I'll tell you, I get the numbers.
Yeah, I get numbers right now. But Mark had a line in this. We were going around asking Mets fans for hot takes. My whole plan was to see
6,000 shares.
That's insane. 6,000 people sent that to their friends. That's sick as fuck. But the whole thing was like seeing how drunk Mets fans were on opening day. So we asked Mets fans for their hottest take, and then we were like, this is how drunk they are. And Mark, very organically, not even that drunk, said, Drew Smith has the best bullpen in the ERA. And then he was like, oh my God, did I say it? Let me do it again. I'm like, no, we're keeping that. You should have said something in that tweet like, Drew Smith is the best team on the reliever. Like, that would have been funny. Yeah. Like, if you just got to just keep going with that thing. But it's okay. We'll get there. Yeah, we'll find a way there. But game two was awesome again. Like, this team just really feeling themselves. Like, I've been going to sleep basically during the fourth or fifth inning of most of these games. Game two, I didn't even want to try and watch it. I had just a long day. And I was like, if I start watching Jared Jones, I'm going to get too excited. Like, I have to get to bed. So I was going to look at it in the morning. Usually I've also been watching full replays in the morning, but this one just wanted to get to the beach early. So I watched the quick 8-minute YouTube version. But I woke up and I literally texted Mark. I said, how the fuck did they do it again? I can't believe they just did it again. Every single day I'd wake up and I'd look at my phone. The Mets had another comeback victory. Beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, that game, yeah, you were sleeping. Because watching Jared Jones come in and just, I mean, be dominant, destroy this team. They had no idea what to do. Was like, oh shit, we're in trouble. With Jose Quintana on the mound, also, like you said, being an ace, like being fantastic, I was like, we really need to score a run here. We're wasting some of the best pitching Jose Quintana has ever done. Just getting back in the against teams in the Central, and this guy looks like an ace. But once they took Jared Jones out of the game, everything changed again. Just felt like the Mets, again, were able to take a breath, like, whew, nice and easy, and they just attacked this Pittsburgh Pirates bullpen, which just they just don't got it. They don't have it like that.
No, and I told you guys about Jared Jones on Monday.
You did.
Jared Jones is like if Spencer Strider wasn't a pussy. Like, he is so so ridiculously good. And we got lucky because the Pirates seem to be like kind of reacting to everything that's going on in baseball right now, where you throw over 97 miles an hour, like, you're probably going to blow your arm out, so we just hope that you're okay. So they said before the game, Derek Shelton, Charrington, Jared Jones, like, it's pure five-inning limit. But this is kind of something that annoys me with, like, pitching development, like,
Please say what it is.
Pitching injury. Why are you counting innings and not pitches?
Yes, that's it. I've never understood why it's an innings limit and not a pitch limit, because he threw 59 pitches in this game through five. That's not five innings of work. That's not the same five.
And they were the easiest five innings ever. This 59 pitches looked like he was in a rocking chair, just throwing 99 miles an hour the whole time. One hit. Mets had one base runner in this game until the seventh inning when they actually came back. But it's just, again, it's so rigid and it's stupid because Jared, but I respect that Jared Jones, like, this was the plan. I was totally okay with it? Like, would you rather me be shut down in September? And the answer is no. Like, this kind of became popularized during the Strasburg shutdown, like about 10 years ago now, where it's like, oh, you're in a playoff run. And last year, Yuri Perez gets shut down for the Marlins. And then you're like, why are you shutting down the best pitcher on a team going to the playoffs? Now he's getting Tommy John surgery anyway. So it's clear that these kind of things don't work. But you got to be like, every inning is not built the same. If you have a 7-pitch inning or a 27-pitch inning with four men on base, those are different on your arm. There's been a lot of studies. Driveline did one that stressful pitches will affect you more than non-stressful pitches. So to just have a rigid 5 innings and done, I'm happy it happened because it literally won the Mets the game, but just it doesn't seem like the smartest way to go about these things.
No, apparently Gary, Keith, and Ron were going off about it in game 3 when the game started. Like, I can't believe they did that. Like, talk about killing the development of a pitcher. They're like, this guy's rolling. You got to do this. You're trying to win ball games there. I think, I don't know who said it, but they said, this is a team that's perpetually stuck in the future, to which I go, well, the Pirates are coming. They're going to be here sooner than we think. But at the same time, you are correct. That was a little bit short-sighted, in my opinion. Like, it lost them the game. That straight up lost them the game.
Literally lost them the game. The Mets had, I'm not even being sarcastic or being hyperbolic, they had no chance to hit Jared Jones in this game. But no one's had a chance to hit Jared Jones all year. He has one of the highest strikeout rates in the league. He has one of the highest whiff rates in the league. He threw in this game, I think it was something like 94% of his pitches in the strike zone, or just for strikes in general. And the Mets weren't even close to it. Like, that's dominance that most humans will never be able to see because they just don't throw 100 miles an hour with wipeout sliders.
Easy from him. Easy.
Freak of nature. I was telling you about Jared Jones like 2 years ago, too. This guy's been fucking building slowly since. But won us the game. But the other thing that won us the game, because Quintana was also a 5-and-dive, because it was just, that's, he did the Quintana thing, 7 pitches in that bat. Reed Garrett. We found something here, Mets fans. We found something in the Reed Garrett. 6 strikeouts and 2 innings. Like I said before, highest strikeout rate for any reliever in baseball. It's ridiculous.
He has been a godsend to this team. It's insane how he's also probably won the Mets, 3 games this year? Just like his ability to come in, shut the door whenever he does, give us multiple innings. This is a role that we've both talked about having, like Christian Scott in, or Jose Budo if he was going to start the season up, or Mike Vassell, whatever these guys are going to be. And we kind of can just let him be there, and we can worry about those guys now just being starters whenever they're ready, because Reed Garrett has now filled in that role that, again, you've seen the Brewers have every single year of, who's the guy who can give us 2 to 3 innings twice a week? And that is Reed Garrett, and he's been filthy.
You know what that makes me think about Reed Garrett and how the Mets see him? What if they think he actually might be able to start? Because the way he pitches, the command he has of his off-speed stuff, and his fastball and slider shapes, even though he doesn't use them a lot, like, that's actually like a starter's build right there. That's a starter's repertoire, because he keeps doing this thing. I talked about a few episodes ago, the Braves series, where he's pitching backwards and hitters have no idea what to do. He threw 31 pitches in this 2-inning stint. Only 4 of those pitches were fastballs or sinkers. Everything else was splitter, gyro, slider, or sweeper. And his primary pitch was a splitter, but it was like pretty even with all those 3 off-speed pitches. He threw 10 splitters. 9 of them were outside the strike zone. I think 4 of them got swings and misses. The one he threw in the strike zone was a called strike.
Yep.
Like, he was just playing with these guys. Like, they had no chance against him. The slide and sweep were pretty even. Those got tons of whiffs. He got 9 whiffs overall and 15 swings. Only 1 ball in play in 2 innings. 1 ball in play in 2 innings. But it's just, he seems very legit. And this just seems like a situation where, again, that fastball and that sinker, I heard him talk about them on, I think he was interviewed. I think it was another Athletic article by Will Sam. He's had a great week, Will.
Shout out, Will.
Shout out, Will. Great reporter. Hope to have him on the show soon. But just Garrett's like, that fastball is amazing. It's got like 17, 18 inches of IVB. And the sinker is something he specifically worked on in the offseason with the tutelage of the Mets at the pitching lab, just wanting another weapon he could really use against lefties. And he's not even throwing any of these pitches. All 5 of them are plus. Maybe the sinker is not plus, but it's still just like a soft contact pitch. So at least 4 of these pitches are plus. The fastball is really good. He doesn't touch it. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Reed Garrett actually gets I'm not like going to push it for it to happen because he's so good in relief. He might just be the Mets' second best reliever. But if you could stretch him out to like 50 or 60 pitches, like, why the fuck not at this point? Like, this bullpen needs a glue guy, and he's been the glue guy right now. And there's more ceiling on top of it.
Who would have thought Reed Garrett would be the guy that's getting all this love when the season started? Not me. But then, like, along with him being the glue guy, keeping it close, shutting him down, then the Mets actually started to rally once the bullpen came in. Like we said, Lindor, great walk. Pete Alonso with the single, and then Joey Wendell, who unfortunately came in for Brett Beatty, who looks like he's hurt. There is no timetable for when he's going to return. It's a tight hamstring, something going on with his hamstring, which, Brett, stretch, drink water. We need you back. We miss you. You've been great. Don't get hurt on us now. But Joey Wendell, the time-traveling baseball player from 1920, came up to the plate at the right time and gets his first big hit as a New York Met, smacking a double down the line, bringing in everybody on the double. And the Mets just did not look back from there, because then Jorge Lopez, your boy, and Drew Smith came in and just shut the door. I mean, that might have been the best inning Drew Chains has ever had as a Met.
Somebody asked me for a Drew Chains breakdown because they were like, what's different about Drew Smith? Like, why has he been better? And there's something that's very different about Drew Smith right now.
What is it?
He's just completely, it's a new pitch. It's a cutter. Drew Smith is now throwing a cutter that's very in between his fastball and the slider in terms of velocity, in terms of movement. It's very in between them. And from last year to this year, he's knocked 15 percentage points off the usage of his fastball, 5 off his slider, and he's throwing this new cutter 22% of the time with a few less changeups as well. That pitch has 40% whiff rate, very, very light contact. He's getting even bad luck on contact on that cutter. It should be giving up, like, I think it's a 130 expected batting average, and like a 250 expected slugging. It's amazing. And like Stuff Plus says that new cutter is his best pitch. And the way he's using it, I think, is really interesting as well, because it's been his early count pitch. Similar to how this happened with Kodai Senga last year, where that was the pitch that took him to the next level, that worked in between his fastball and his splitter. Drew Smith is using this pitch with one strike, with no strikes, with 0-1. It's like it's mixing into his at-bats to basically get him to the slider. Because the fastball is very good, but we've seen in the past that he can't really overdo that fastball, because when guys get around on it, they're going to hit it hard. They're going to hit it a long way. Like that's just the crime of that big, like nice high rising fastball. But this cutter mixing in, it's getting him soft contact. It's getting him into and out of at bats quickly. And it's something that I feel like just for now, hitters aren't ready for, because it's very new, but it's nice to have that movement profile right in between again, these two pitches. So just a new wrinkle, soft contact, and it's a weapon, and it looks really good, and it seems to have like really brought him back up to the reliever we always hoped he could be.
Yes, we love Drew Chains on this podcast. We know we're always, this is a Drew Smith podcast. We always have been, always will be. All you haters out there who are like, Drew Smith sucks, Drew Smith this or that, we've stood by him. Glad to see that he's pitching well. And your boy Jorge Lopez, again, another great inning on Tuesday and another great inning on game 3 on Wednesday.
Just super solid. And the last thing from this game is, we get into the end of the sweep here. This Max Wiener stuff is hilarious.
Oh, we sat right next to him, like right really? Behind, or right in front of him on game 1. He's awesome. He's a good dude. And I normally think like that gimmicky stuff is a little lame at times. But one, I do think he pulls it off. He's killing it. He's crushing it. Shout out to Alora. Max. Two, positive Mets fan. He's a positive Mets fan, and I'm happy to give light to the guys who are actually real Mets fans and not those idiots who scream and yell when they lose.
Totally. Like that, and that's something I just think the fan base needed to rally around. So some dude who's wearing neon colors with like crazy hair and a big chain. He's just having a good time. So shout out Max Wiener. I think he's been a lightning rod for Mets fans, which is hilarious. That's just this random dude. But yeah, he's fun presence to have around the team, and I'm happy we got him right now.
Definitely. And then what are you saying? Gotta talk some shit about MLB TV. What do you got for me here?
I've been a lot of MLB. I don't usually watch MLB TV for Mets games because where we live, I get blacked out, which is one thing that I hate about MLB TV. But watching it day after day, morning after morning here, trying to watch full replays of games and then watch them live when the timing aligns, the way they do the ads in between innings
it's insane.
Is the most enraging thing in the world, where they just keep flipping through the same 3 highlights the whole time. And all I'm seeing is Aaron Judge, first home runs, the captain of the Yankees, April 2023.
Yep.
A random Will Brennan walk-off hit from insane. June 2023 for no reason. Jordan Walker's first hit as a major leaguer over and over again. And then the game that they play in the ballpark where the hat moves around.
Oh,
with
my
the baseball
God, I hate
inside,
it.
Where I'm like, why? Because usually I watch MLB TV. I'm almost never just watching one game. And even if I do, it's like the second thing I'm paying attention to. Like I'm working and watching MLB TV just to watch a pitcher. But usually it's like 2 or 3 or 4 on at one time. Or I'm like focused on the Mets. Almost every inning, they're missing like 4 or 5 pitches to start the inning.
Yeah.
Where it's like, this is the only thing you guys are meant to do is play baseball games. Why are we missing pitches of an inning? There was even a time where I was playing picture in picture because I was prepping the podcast while the end game was ending. The volume of the game wouldn't come back on because there was still a stupid ad playing. Yeah. Sometimes even just the Baseball Zen ad. And I'm seeing Mets baseball happening in the picture in picture, but the Baseball Zen sounds are going. Like, how? I can't understand how MLB continues to fuck these things up year after year, day after day, and there's just so many baseball fans who rely on this, and it kind of sucks. Alex Fast, where are you at? I need some help with this. We really need to fix this. Just give me highlights from this year. How hard could it be to program current highlights in? Give me highlights from the playoffs. Why am I only watching highlights from opening day 2023? Like, it's fucking year ago, dude.
Yeah, Aaron Judge also first home run as a captain. That's not a highlight. That's not a highlight at all.
Make me want to gag. Make me want to throw up. But
yeah, that's like saying, oh, Jeff McNeil's first home run being a dad. I don't know. Like, who cares?
That's more meaningful. So Aaron Judge is, what, the seventh most home runs in a single season in baseball history, and now with his first home run as a captain, why do we have to glaze this guy for no reason?
Aaron Judge, man, he's the face of the Yankees. But you know what? We're not talking about the Yankees anymore. Going on to the last game of the series here, Game 3. I like what you put in the notes here. Fucking feeling themselves. And I got to tell you, walking into the stadium today, feeling myself too. Got free parking, got free tickets.
How'd you get the parking?
My spot.
Okay.
I didn't ask. I got my spot that I will never disclose. Everyone, if you know, you know. But if you don't know, sucks to be you because it's free parking. But got free parking, walked in, brought a water bottle. I'm like, I'm not spending a dollar. Got a whiff of a hot dog. Spent $7. I saw the Nathan's hot dog. My stomach gave a little grumble, and I was like, you know what? They're winning. I'm feeling good. Let me buy a hot dog. And I'll tell you what, after I bought that hot dog, the bats woke up.
I'll say, if you guys are ever on a strike, never join the picket line with Mark, because Mark is going to cross and scab at the first second he smells any food or someone gives him any modicum of an offer. He'll never hold the line. I'm telling you, I'm back to Citi Field next Friday. We're going to go to the first game with the Citi Connect jerseys against the Cardinals.
Yeah.
I'm not spending $1 that same this year. Look at me. Besides beer. I'm a simple man. Besides beer. I'm flesh and blood here. I got to buy some beer. But I'm not buying any food or water in that stadium all year. I guarantee it.
We're going to have a bit where it's going to be, what does James bring into the stadium today?
I'm going to bring some wild food to this game. You guys are going to love it. But I don't know if you knew this either because you were at the game. It came out before some of the beat writers talking about it. The Mets wrote sweep on their clubhouse shuffleboard table in sand.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Nice.
I was like, I don't know if that's too much. Then I was like, oh, that's just enough. And also the fact that Mets are playing shuffleboard, those are our guys. Would have been cool to do shuffleboard content with them when we had the chance to, but no opportunities.
Maybe the new guys brought the shuffleboard in. You know who, out of anybody on the Mets team, who do you think is the biggest shuffleboard guy? Like, who do you think was like, we need to get shuffleboard in here? And then who do you think is the best and worst? I think this is a good little thing here.
Shuffleboard guy, I want to say Wendell, just because he's an old school kind of guy. It's an old school bar game. And I think the best, weirdly, is going to be Harrison Bader. I feel like he's cool. I think he's good at all the stupid games, and I think the worst has to be Pete. Pete's definitely.
I was going to go worst Pete. I was going to go shuffleboard guy. I think Tyrone Taylor's bringing in the shuffleboard. He's just a good old-fashioned ball player, and I could see him loving a little shuffleboard. He's a competitor. That's a competitive game. I was with you, though, on the best. Harrison Bader's definitely, like, annoyingly good at shuffleboard, where they're like, are you playing at home? You know, Harrison Bader's probably going out a little bit, hanging out in New York City. I'm sure he knows where the best shuffleboard is.
Harrison Bader just seems like the guy, again, who's annoyingly good at everything. Like every single little video game. Yeah, like mini game, like all the little bullshit. But we talked about in the intro, Tyrone Taylor got the big hit in this game. Starling Marte hit the big home run. He's just been murdering us and for the Starling Marte not hitting second propaganda. Yes. He's been killing us ever since that happened.
I feel like I see him hit a home run every game I go to. I'm like, every time I'm like, I should bet Starling Marte to hit a home run. I don't do it. He hits one.
I want to play a game with you, though. I don't know if you're paying too close attention to the ballpark, but if you had to guess right now, what do you think Tyrone Taylor's batting average and OPS are?
Tyrone Taylor's batting average and OPS. I think he's hitting .280, and I think his OPS is .811.
You want to be shocked?
Yes.
.341, .841.
Whoa, .341. Does he get out?
No, a lot of singles, and it's been hot recently. It's just, the guy's awesome.
Good ball player.
The bottom of this order coming together. The Harrison Bader home run today was like borderline orgasmic. I was like, how's this happening?
I think Hunter Stratton might have been tipping pitches. I don't know what he was doing, but Pete, when he scored after, I believe, the Tyrone Taylor hit, immediately went over to Harrison Bader, talked to him, and Harrison Bader looked like he was waiting for that pitch. So I wonder if Hunter Stratton was tipping pitches. Maybe some of you guys at home could go back and look at the clips.
That's a really good catch by you. I like that. But other thing, just talk about briefly this game, because there really wasn't much to talk about, because we beat the fucking brakes off the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Ooh, I got something for you, though, real quick. Bailey Falter, sneakiest 91 I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Bailey Falter's pitching that. He's doing the four-seamer now because he has that good arm slot and he's getting the IVB on the four-seam. I've always told you, I don't think Bailey Falter is as bad as he gets credit for. He's putting together a nice little season for the Pirates right now. And also, I think Ron was talking about it today, but following Jared Jones with Bailey Falter has got to be hell for opposing hitters. Because you're seeing 91 with the same kind of motion, but from the other side of the arm slot. Also, funny thing, classic Gary moment from the game on Tuesday. I don't know if you caught this watching it, but he described where the term southpaw comes from, which is hilarious. So traditionally, baseball stadiums, they'd be built like kind of intentionally for the sun to set over the fence, like behind the stadium. So that if the sun sets there, that's west. Sun rises in the east, sets in the west. So a lefty is their shoulders facing there, so the arm is pointing south. Southpaw. Oh,
interesting. Right? I didn't know that. I'll buy it.
Yeah. Funny. And then just quick savvy stuff. Again, another game where just battled and grinded. Hard contact, not many whiffs, some walks, but just mixed all six of his pitches. And he got the slider outs when he needed them. Big strike guy, I think it was, I don't remember if it was Rowdy or Connor Joe, but he got a big one with a few men on base. I think it was the fifth. He got a big double play in like the fourth, and he was showing a lot of emotion. Oh, like he does. Yeah,
when O'Neill Cruz hit an 112 mile per hour line drive one hopper to Jeff McNeil. He hit it so hard that McNeil like knocked it down and was still able to get a double play with plenty of time. I couldn't believe how hard that ball was hit.
Ellie's like an 85th percentile runners in terms of sprint speed. But just Luis Severino just goes out there and hasn't really had his best start yet. He just keeps getting guys out, not giving up runs. 2.14 ERA in the season for Luis Severino. 2.14, guys. He's one of the best in baseball. He's good. We told you he was good. Everyone quit on him because he got BABIP to fucking shit that first start of the year. And now he's just good. And this team is good. He's good. The rotation's like patching it together. The bottom of the lineup's hitting. This is exactly it. Don't say it. This is exactly what you want before you get on a flight to Los Angeles, though. Just relax, good vibes, team's feeling themselves. That's going to be a fun plane ride. They're probably taking it today. It's going to be a fun plane ride.
There should be some drinks had on that plane ride to LA today. Get the family on the plane, too. Have some good time. Play some cards. Maybe shoot some dice. I don't know. I hope the Mets are shooting dice. If the Mets are shooting dice, this team's winning the World Series. I don't care. That's all I need to know, if they're shooting dice.
I want to know how much the team is gambling internally, and I hope it's a lot.
Yeah, probably a decent amount. I would hope, you know, I'd hope so. I'd hope that these guys are playing cards for money. Like, have a little stakes. I want competition. Competition is good. And as we see with the Mets, as there's been a little more competition coming with the idea of JD Martinez coming, DJ Stewart wakes up. Brett Beatty's like, okay, I got the spot, but I know it's not mine forever if I don't play well. Starting to hit the ball well. The pitchers, none of their spots are guaranteed. They're all pitching well. The bullpen's stepping up. This idea of, weirdly enough, all the guys who have like guaranteed spots, like Lindor, Nimmo, McNeil, guys who aren't going anywhere, not hitting at all.
Not doing nothing. And that's, again, this, we talked about at the top of the show. It's the craziest thing about this team. Everything we thought should be happening, really, besides Pete Alonso, is not happening. Like, if this team had Lindor playing well, Kodai Senga pitching every fifth day, and JD Martinez in the lineup, would they even have lost a game so far? Like, I don't know. Like, they're rolling, and nothing really has gone right. It's shocking. Like, again, this is the Mets do this every April. The Mets are the best April team in the history of baseball. So we're trying not to get too far ahead of our skis, but at least this team is putting us in a place where we thought they'd be in the offseason. We wavered for a week where they're fun, hard-nosed, gritty baseball. These guys seem like they like each other. They seem like they're enjoying themselves. They're having fun, and they're playing well. They have these grinded-out games. They're finding ways to win, and then once a week, they just beat the shit out of somebody. And that is exactly what you want.
It's so much more fun to watch as a fan, too. My God. Like, listen, of course, winning is more fun. Duh, stupid idiot take, Mark. But, like, even when they're losing these games that they've lost recently, I haven't been like, I'm sick to my stomach. I want to nosedive off my balcony. I've been like, okay, you lose baseball games. It's a long season. But they're playing so much better baseball than they were at the start. And really excited to see what they do again on a big road trip, which we will talk about in a second. But first, as you guys know, during the week when we do our episodes for the midweek series, we're going to go ahead and drop a prospect report. We've got a lot to talk about here. James went deep into the numbers because we got some hitters to talk about today too. But we, of course, have to start it off with the man that is Christian Scott.
Christian Scott, guys, this dude's the truth. Like, there's no reason he's not in this team yet. There really isn't. I understand they want to wait for him. He's had some issues with home runs I'm going to talk about in a second, but I think there's a case that he's the best healthy pitcher in the organization right now. And I don't know how much longer we can go with him wasting these bullets at Syracuse, because it's stupid. He had another start Tuesday night, 5 1/3 innings, 7 strikeouts, 3 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 walks, 11 whiffs, and they're mostly on his fastball. And interestingly enough, in this game against the Charlotte Knights, the White Sox, somehow their AAA team is worse than their Major League team.
I was going to say, you think their AAA team could beat their Major League team?
I think in a 7-game series, they could push him to 7. If Nick Nastrini is back in the AAA team, because he just got called up and had a really good first start. Yes, exactly. Keep him on the Knights where he belongs, and then just play right there. But he gave up 2 home runs in the first inning of this game, 2 solo home runs. One to one of our favorite players in the league, Danny Mendick.
Mendick's back in Chicago? That's how you know he was a terrible player to have there. Oh, yeah, Charlotte, my bad. That's how you know he had no business being on the team last year. Jesus Christ, he can't even make the White Sox.
Look up how many at-bats he had while I talk about Christian Scott for the Mets last year. And also Oscar Colas. The Colas home run was on a fastball that was up and away. Just a good piece of hitting by Colas. Got the bat head out there and just drove it. What, how many at-bats did Mendick
not nearly as many. Okay, he had 69 plate appearances last year. Nice.
All right, good. But then the Mendick home run was on a two-strike fastball that was literally on his hands. I don't know how he got it out. And the Mendick home run had a 92-mile-an-hour exit velocity, and the Colas was not 96. So I think the baseball in AAA might be a little bit juicy. But after this happened, Christian Scott only gave up one hit the rest of the game. And then even with that, so he gave up two fastball home runs in this game. He's given up five home runs overall AAA this year. That matches total from last year. And that's more walks than he's given up in AAA so far, which I think it could
Doesn't
be.
AAA use the old baseballs? Isn't that the whole thing with AAA allegedly. Too?
It's an alleged thing, yeah. So I don't know. It feels like it is. 92-mile-an-hour home run, a pitch on the hands. It seems bullshit.
Yeah.
I spent this week editing a big Pete Alonso video because he's nearing 200 home runs. We're going to do like, fuck it, all 200 of Pete Alonso's home runs right when that happens. It's all ready to go. But watching a lot of 2019 home runs, I was like, this is insane. Like, Pete hit some home runs where he like golfed the ball and like low and outside and just like snuck it over the right field fence. But Christian Scott then kind of started leaning more on his off-speed pitches earlier in at bats in this game. He didn't throw another fastball in this game when he was 0-1 I think I might have read the wrong thing here. But when he was 0-1 or 0-0, he threw much more sweepers than fastballs. And overall in the season, he's up to 26 strikeouts, 3 walks, and just 14 and 3rd innings with 3 walks.
Disgusting.
3 walks and 26 strikeouts. 5 home runs and 3 walks is weird, but I'm going to chalk it up to the baseball. Just the fact that, similar to Jared Jones, how good he is with that big old fastball. When you have that kind of fastball, you're going to miss a lot of bats, but when they hit it, it's going to go out. So I think he's just going to be home run prone, which I think is like the only chink in his armor. But still, just the excitement levels off the charts for Christian Scott. I think once he gets here, he's going to be good, and I think he's going to get here soon.
It's going to be a big star. People are going to want to be there for that one.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. This is the Mets' first real pitching prospect in a legitimate decade.
It's like Matt Harvey, Steven Matz, Jacob DeGrom. Yeah, those guys. the old garb.
People at University of Florida should probably have to answer questions about why this guy was a reliever throwing a sinker, where he's going to enter the league as one of the most exciting pitching prospects throwing high fastballs.
Baseball is stupid sometimes. They love bunting with like one out and to move the guy from second to third. Like, they just do stupid shit at the college level.
It's old school guys being old school. This, but it's just Christian Scott throwing a sinker out of the bullpen seems really stupid looking back now. But another one, big guy, your guy, SEC guy, another one. Blake Tidwell, probably his best appearance as a Met. And I say appearance because it wasn't technically a start. He was a piggybacker on a Max Kranich rehab start, but 5 innings, 3 hits, 2 runs, 3 walks, 10 strikeouts, 88 pitches, 55 strikes, 15 whiffs. And I want to shout out again, my boy, shout him out last week, Prospect Tilt. He charted this Blake Tidwell game. Just himself, Tidwell and Sproat. So in high A and double A, there's no Statcast data on these guys. Triple A and low A, we have it. So it's a little Oreo of no information. Prospect Hill has been great for this. Look him up on Twitter, guys. Prospect Hill, he's wonderful. But Tidwell sat 96, touched 97, just cruised throughout. Even 3 of those walks, one was intentional. And again, he charted these pitches. He said 2 of them were basically bullshit. They were edge pitches that he just didn't get the calls on. Throwing a lot of changeups, which I think is big for Blade because he has a couple off-speed pitches, like the slider and the curveball. So having a changeup is nice because we know the fastball shape isn't spectacular. But used a lot of pitches. 10 strikeouts in 5 innings is not a joke, especially for a guy who's, I don't know, he hasn't even thrown that many innings in the last 2 years. He's starting to cruise through double A.
We know Blade's my boy. He was like my top pitcher in that draft, and the Mets got him in the second round. That was a pleasant little surprise there. The thing that I've noticed too with the Mets pitching prospects is seemingly every single day there is someone striking out 10 batters. I feel like they're getting an insane amount of strikeouts, which means the stuff's got to be good.
The pitching lab, man, is doing miracles on me. But another guy, 10 strikeouts this week. All right, 10 strikeouts last week, 6 strikeouts on Wednesday. Dom Hamill, he had a really bad first start. And Syracuse, he's a guy who's started slow the last few years, but again, 16 strikeouts now in his last 10 and thirds innings pitch. He's been very fastball heavy so far, not leaning on that big. I don't know if the good pitch is the slider or the curveball, but I know he has 2 variations of it, but one of them is just the hammer that's like ferociously disgusting. But he's been leading with his changeup as his like primary off-speed pitch so far this season, which I feel like is probably directive from the organization where it's like, if this changeup is a real pitch, then we believe you'll be a star at the next level. But that pitch has been behind the fastball. It's been the best pitch at getting whiffs, and it's been the second most used pitch. So encouraging that Dom Hamill is figuring out the little nooks and crannies he's getting into to become a major league star there.
Yes, and then some other pitchers to just quickly talk about. We got Isaac Grofman. I don't know who the hell is Isaac Grofman.
No, you're just reading the notes now. So shout out to Isaac Grofman. He's a Mets fan. He's big into pitching development. He's a college student at Binghamton. He had a great thread about Jonah Tong. I'm shouting you out, Isaac. He DM'd me afterwards because he was like, hey, talk to me about some pitching stuff. He's a big listener to the podcast. I never realized Jonah Tong was from Canada. Isaac talked about that in his thread. And he comped his motion and release to a shorter Tyler Glasnow. He did some side-by-side videos with freeze frames because it's just so over the top. And he strides so far down the mound. Ooh. And it's big IVB fastball. And it's the deep dropping curveball. But the thing that kind of separates Tong, which we alluded to last week, but now just getting some more information on him, It's a cutter that falls in between those. It's kind of like a little gyro slidery, but it's like that third pitch wrinkle. So as a guy in low A, Jones Tong is 3+ pitches. Two of them is in the fastball and the cutter are plus-plus, where the curveball doesn't have great grades, but it looks incredible. So I'm going to just choose to trust how it looks. Guy looks like a legit piece. I picked him up in my first Dynasty League this weekend.
Whoa.
I was really excited about that. Yeah, first time.
Tong roster spot. You might be one of the only people in the world.
Probably. It's 16 teams, 55 roster spots. Oh, so it's a deep one. It's a really deep one. But, I mean, hey, I beat the world to him, so he can't do that. Another guy on that same Dynasty roster, the GOAT, the Sproat GOAT, Brandon Sproat, baby. Another 4 innings, 5 Ks. Fastball's up to 98. Shout out prospect Tilt for another good pitch tracking on this one. Guy looks great. Another pitching prospect. Never heard of this guy. Last pitcher we're going to talk about. You ever heard of Wilson Lopez?
I don't know. Maybe.
Just he was touching 99 across 35 pitches for single A. St. Lucie the other day.
It's Alex's cousin, right? Wilson?
Yeah, Alex's cousin Wilson. He had the fastest 5 pitches for all of low A that day. So Wilson Lopez, we're still waiting for the first 100-mile-an-hour pitch. We still haven't gotten that in a while for the Mets. It's been over a full year. He got to 99.3. I'm dying for 100 miles an hour, but we almost got there. Maybe next week we do it.
Maybe next week we get there. All right, on the offensive side now, Alex Ramirez. Swinging the bat a little bit. Got the highest batting average among Mets prospects at .353, which includes a .500 BABIP. So it's gonna calm down a little bit. He's gonna get knocked down a couple pegs here, but a .200 ISO, which is huge for him, because for those of you know, ISO, isolated slugging, basically just tells you how it puts more weight on the extra base hits than normal slugging percentage does.
Yeah, it takes your slugging percentage, but takes out the singles. So it's your isolated slugging. So every extra base hit you had, it's a math out. And the tools are still legit with Alex Ramirez. Yeah. He's still huge. He's still a beast. He still runs fast. He's stolen 5 bags already. And this is kind of what happens when you leave Brooklyn. This is why we're just begging for Ryan Clifford to get out of the wind, to get off the beach, and become a high-level prospect again. But still a lot of strikeouts for Alex Ramirez. Not many walks, but just this bat-to-ball game is definitely going to be what takes him to the majors. And again, while he's lost the ceiling of being a potential like top 10, top 20 prospect in the league, he's still a guy who could definitely be a major league contributor. So happy to see him hitting the ball well.
How about your boy Kevin Parada making it onto a little prospect report here? He's smacking the ball around down in AA, 904 OPS through 30 plate appearances. Again, everything with a grain of salt. But he is playing really well at AA. And maybe we were a little tough on him just because first round pick, you have these expectations, you heard all these great things about what kind of hitter he was in college, you saw the stats they put up in college, and they just didn't show up yet. But also, he did deal with some injuries. Baseball's also hard. We know that growth isn't linear. It's not necessarily just this, you are good here, you keep being good everywhere you go. But it looks like he's starting to figure something out in Binghamton.
Another guy where Brooklyn's just a really hard place to hit. And he ended last year's season with Brooklyn really well. He got himself to 115 WRC plus by the end of the season, which 115 WRC plus in that league is still probably 740, 750 OPS. But just doing that and getting this promotion is a really big deal. And he's been ridiculously patient this year. Like patience, I don't know if it can sustain. 25% walks, 28% strikeouts. So I think it's just him being very passive, waiting for his pitch. Again, a lot of these minor league stats are kind of bullshit because the team, I feel like, is just giving these kind of a high level prospect like directives, things to work on. So maybe the team is just telling Parada, see more pitches. And we know if you see more pitches, you can get to a spot. Good mastery of the strike zone. But I don't know. Like, again, good stuff so far. It's hard to evaluate these guys in AA and high A specifically because we don't have exit velocities on them. But some guys we do have some exit velocities on. Of course, the greatest player in the history of the Syracuse Mets. His jersey will be in the rafters one day. Mark Vientos, baby. There still is the same section of Mets fans that hate Francisco Lindor. I still love Mark Vientos. And you know what? Guy's got 140 WRC plus, 3 home runs and 14 RBIs in 15 games at Syracuse, hitting the piss out of the ball.
I mean, he crushes AAA every time. There is never a doubt that he can hit at the AAA level. As we know, the problem is once you see velo, Mark Vientos does not hit. So if he's fixed that in AAA, great. I don't think we can tell in 15 games. I don't think he's going to be the savior by any means, and it definitely makes it almost impossible for him when JD Martinez hopefully ever plays a game for the orange and blue. But until then, Mark Vientos has a chance, maybe.
Yeah, one thing cool about Vientos is that he's a 14% walk rate right now. That is his highest ever at any level he's played more than 12 games at. So nice little trickle. If he can just see more pitches, if he can get a better on base guy, everything starts to make a lot more sense. But at least he's hitting the crap out of the ball in AAA.
Yep, Nick Morabito, some that we've talked about. We saw him in the Futures game. Freak athlete, putting up good numbers to start the year as well. 1,000 OPS, 200 WRC+, plus, walking as much as he strikes out. And that's kind of something that we're noticing with a lot of these younger Mets hitters is that they're all getting on base. They're all taking good pitches. Like you said, maybe that's the directive with these top prospects. But same walk rate as a strikeout rate. Same thing with Jet Williams, who's having a slow start to the year. But again, he's, 19 years old in AA? Like, he's still 20, so... still so way ahead of the pack of where you're supposed to be in terms of your development. So these little things, again, it's such a small sample. It's hard to really tell what's actually sticky and what really matters. But that's why you listen to us every week talk about it, because we'll keep updating you as we keep going.
And the Jet thing, a lot of what his development is right now is proving he's a legit center fielder. So I think that's just, again, probably like we're comfortable with Jet at the plate. This is also why in the offseason, I told you guys I bumped Drew Gilbert ahead of Jet in my overall prospect list just because I saw Drew Gilbert kill double A. I wanted to see Jet Williams kill double A, even though they're very big difference in age. I want to see it happen. Hasn't happened yet, but again, just having the plate discipline and then just maintaining playing in center field is big. Another thing about Morabi, though, again, he's a St. Lucie. We have Statcast. We have exit velocity data on him. He's running at nearly a 40% hard hit rate with six batted balls over 100 miles an hour.
Nice.
Very good start to the year. Another guy who is becoming one of my favorite prospects in the system. Also St. Lucie, so we have the data. My boy Jesus Baez. Mr. 112 exit velocity in the spring breakout game. Four walks and four strikeouts on the year. It's 8% each way because he gets up to the plate. He looks at the pitcher. He's like, I'm going to fucking hit you. What?
What were you going to say?
Let's say I'm going to piss all over this ball.
Okay, because I was about to say something that I was like, oh, James coming in hot. What's he got for us?
I love the dude. 56% hard hit rate at St. Lucie. Ooh. 15 batted balls over 100 miles an hour. Five over 105 miles an hour. Dude's 19 years old. He's built like a brick shit house, and he loves to hit the ball.
Yeah, and you know what? JT Schwartz also shitting on the ball a little bit too. 973 OPS and walking almost twice as much as he strikes out. But we do have to talk about one guy, and we're going to do it really quickly. Luis Angel Acuña is looking about as bad as you possibly can.
Yeah, 30 WRC plus start the year, 3% walks, 20% strikeouts. It's been very
This was
bad.
The fear. This was the fear with him.
Yeah, and also he hit a home run like his first minor league at bat of the season. He's pretty probably like very
the
excited.
Worst thing that could have happened for his his career.
And he's just really a guy. But I've been kind of telling people like a lot. Been a guy. I'll just mess Twitter DM people that are coming at me recently. But just what I think he was billed as a prospect just wasn't true. Again, you guys have to remember that we traded a legit bag of bones and Max Scherzer to get him.
Yeah.
And I know we paid down a lot of the contract, but we gave damaged goods and we gave damaged goods with some money. And they're still paying some of Max Scherzer's contract. We're not paying all of it. And again, Max Scherzer is the only thing that could have stopped the Rangers from winning the World Series last year. The way I'm trying to comp Luis Angel Acuña right now, the way I'm trying to describe him is just like my hope for him, my goal for him is like a souped up Whit Merrifield. Like that's his major league ceiling. Okay. Where Whit Merrifield, he might have been ugly and you might have not really respected him as a baseball player.
Go Cox.
But during his prime, the guy was like running like 4 or 5 wins a season. Yeah. On the terms of his first 6 years of service time, I think he had something like 30 war, 25 war. If you get something like that, that's a major win for player development. And similar to him and Acuña, it's speed. It's not the best plate discipline, but it's probably going to be a lot of contact. More so for Acuña, he has power, but he struggles to lift the ball, and he can play infield, and he can play outfield at a high level. So if you get a guy who's second base, who's left field, who's right field, who might be able to mix in a center and shortstop in a pinch, who's getting on base, he's stealing bases, and he's just keeping the line moving. Again, I don't think he's ever going to be any close to the best player on your team if you want to be a very competitive, good team. I think it sucks that his last name is Acuña, but yeah. I still think there's like a good Major League Baseball player in here, but it's just the ceiling was probably never a superstar. It's a little bit unfair than him what has been placed on him.
I wish his name was Luis Angel Smith. His career would look so much different.
Luis Angel Martinez. It was the dream, but whatever. What are you going to do?
We digress. That's the prospect report, guys, though. Thank you so much. If you are enjoying this stuff, we want to keep giving it to you. Just let us know. Let us know in the comment section. Let us know in the DMs, whatever it is, if you're enjoying the prospect report. If nobody wants to listen to this, we won't do it. But if you like it, which
people
I think
seem like
do,
to like it, though.
I think they do like it, but just let us know so we keep doing it. Now we're on to the final part of the episode here with the Dodgers preview. We're heading out to LA to get our West Coast trip started. James, as always, you have the honors. What are the pitching matchups?
Pitching matchups in this series. This is going to be a fun one for Mets fans. On Friday night, so it's 10 o'clock game, then we also have a 4 o'clock game and a 4 o'clock game. So two afternoon games. We don't have to deal with that much midnight Mets. Friday night, though, the only 10 o'clock game. You guys are going to want to stay up for it because Sean Manaea versus the forgotten son, the spurned Met, Yoshinobu Yamamoto.
Ooh. And
Mr. Yamamoto has not been exceptional to start his major league career. Probably is a long way to go, but not exactly been worth the massive price tag that everybody and the expectations everybody put on him early.
Yeah, $300 million. He's paid like the best pitcher in baseball, and he has not been that. Now, granted, the stuff has looked nasty at times. When it clicks for him, you're like, oh, there it is. I get it, but he's having the troubles that you saw Kodai Senga have at the start of last year, even where it's just like, this is a completely different, sounds crazy, it is a completely different game than they play in Japan. It's just not the same. Yes. You have to learn how to pitch here. You have to learn with the travel, the environment, playing outside. Yeah, like, and it's been cold in LA too. And I think one of his starts was in Chicago. It was cold. Like, he's not, he's like, where? I thought I signed for the Los Angeles Dodgers. What's happening here?
Shohei Yamamoto has been really good to start his career, though, so he's kind of bucking all that stuff.
Been great, yeah.
But something weird about Yamamoto is that he throws, like we talked about a lot in this episode, that like really just quintessential like high-rising fastball. But the Dodgers do a thing with their pitchers' game plans where they don't like high fastballs as an organization. And one of the things that people thought would really help Yamamoto's ceiling was that, he didn't throw many like high fastballs in Japan because it's not a thing there. Like ground balls, like to keep the ball down. So people thought if he would kind of locate that fastball up, similar to what Imanaga has been doing so far, that Imanaga. Why do
he'll remember one day. I don't know.
I had it for months. Now I stopped saying his name, so I lost it. But I've been writing instead of saying it. But the Dodgers don't do that because the Dodgers just so are afraid of home runs because their team is so good that they're like, just keep the ball in the park. We'll out hit them. We won't really care. And if you can see this with guys like Walker Buehler and like the way their whole bullpen is structured, where it's just like, we never, ever, ever, this happened with Ryan Pepio too last year. And now the Rays are throwing high fastballs with him. He's getting whiffs on it, but we just don't want to give up home runs. So Yamamoto now, if you look at the heat map on his fastball, I think it's because he's kind of stuck in between two things he wants to do, and he's not executing either of them. He's just throwing them down the middle. So hopefully, the heat map is literally straight down the middle on his fastballs. It's hilarious to look at. But the curveball's great. The split is great. I think all the pitches are still plus. I think he's still going to be a stud. But right now, it seems like he is just getting used to the game, and it really hasn't been special yet. But we'll see. And then Saturday afternoon, ace off, Jose Budo versus Gavin Stone.
Oh, yeah.
Two young up-and-coming pitchers. Two guys who were kind of cast off last year for their respective teams and fan bases who are now blistering to start the season. Gavin Stone's been awesome. He finally picked up an off-speed pitch, a breaking ball. I think it's a slider. I'm going to double-check right now, but he was always, similar to Budo, a fastball changeup guy who the first time he came up, Major League hitters were like, okay, we'll just wait for one of these pitches that were ready to come. But it's a cutter, actually, for Gavin Stone. So it's the cutter for Gavin Stone. He's mixing it a sinker with a fastball, some slider, some curveball. So it's mostly that cutter. And he's been better than he was last year. Still think it's a little fool's gold with him, but we'll see. And then Sunday, not an ace off. Adrian Houser versus James Paxton, not an ace off. But
that is their over under 15 walks between those two guys. James Paxton, I don't know how the other night got through this game through six innings, but he walked like seven guys. It was a tough watch.
It is a tough watch, but the pitchers aren't really the exciting thing for this Dodgers team. No. We are going to face Shohei Ohtani. We're going to face Mookie Betts. We're going to face Freddie Freeman. We're going to face Will Smith. Teoscar Hernandez, who looks like one of the best players in baseball because he just gets to pick up all the scraps and do whatever the fuck he wants in those at-bats because there's always two or three guys on base. It's just, when this team comes to at-bat, it's really fun for them. It's not that much fun for us. It's crazy that I think we have a better record than them right now, too. They just lost series.
No, we don't.
They just dropped two series in a row to the Nationals and the Padres. 12-9. Yeah, Mark's Nationals. Shout out Luis Garcia, the best hitter in the league. But this Dodgers team, this lineup is ferocious. I'm not excited to face him. Mookie Betts is hitting 370 with six homers.
Mookie Betts is a 223 OPS plus.
470 on base percentage.
Shohei Ohtani, I'm going to read out the fun stats. So Shohei Ohtani on the year is hitting 341 with a 385 on base, 1019 OPS. I'm going to pull up the game or splits here because with runners in scoring position, you won't believe how terrible he's been with runners in scoring position, and yet he's still hitting 314. He has 21 plate appearances, one hit with runners in scoring position. He is hitting .053. with runners in scoring position. Otherwise, he's hitting .436 on the season in 50 plate appearances. Like, he's so unbelievably good. This team is disgusting. This team is crazy. This is a huge, huge heat check for the Mets. This is a good one. I think this is a perfect time to get a heat check too in April, going on the West Coast trip. I'm really excited for this one. Like, this can be some fun baseball. They have the chance to just beat the pants off of us for sure because this lineup is crazy. But the way the Mets have been playing, I feel better than I would have if you asked me at the beginning of the season for sure.
At the beginning of the season, I looked at this road trip after the team was 0-4, I think, and I told you, I was like, this could kill the whole season right here.
They might have three wins going into May. Like,
that's what I'm saying, like six games on the road against these good teams. One very good team, one pretty good team. But the Mets always find a way to show up when they go to LA. Even last year, the worst series of all time, they won the series in Los Angeles in April. Like, I think maybe doing this, they used to do this West Coast trip always in July. Remember Syndergaard hit those two home runs on a weeknight? That was awesome.
That was great.
College summer. I was so drunk that night. That was so much fun. Let's do karaoke at 4th Street. Shout out to 4th Street.
You're about to say fucking ketamine when you said the K. I was like, whoa.
What are you doing? My parents listen to the show.
I'm not saying you do it. I thought you were just going to drop that on the podcast and be like, whoa, your parents and my parents listen to this show.
That's what I'm saying. No, I was doing karaoke, you asshole. But it was a great night. I remember this with my boy Ryan, and we were like, we're on our phone. We were like, holy shit, Syndergaard's another home run. I miss pitchers hitting. I know you don't miss pitchers hitting, but pitchers hitting used to be really fun three times a season. But I don't know. Just show if the Mets just win on Friday night. If we can get a win on Friday night, if we could beat Yamamoto.
I'd like to beat Yamamoto a lot.
Twitter will be so much fun. It'll be so much fucking fun to be on Twitter that night.
Especially riling up Dodgers fans. They're a soft fan base.
Oh, we have the meme. I have the meme that I made. It's all ready to go.
Yes.
Oh, I can't wait to throw that meme out there. Oh, it's going to be such a good meme. We got to find the moment. We got to find the response. We got to find the time.
Trust you. Twitter's your thing.
Yeah, I got to see. I mean, I'm not going to be awake for any of these games. So I might have to entrust you with a big bullet in the holster for this one. This is a hollow point.
I'm going to have to clean out my Friday.
Or you know what? No, just let some flow through and then you'll know the moment.
True.
I'm probably good at Twitter in a much more objective sense, but you're really good at riling people up still.
I am. I do know how to get the people going.
Yeah, you know, tickle a fan base a little bit. I know you could do that with the Dodgers. But that's a Dodgers preview. Just last thing, just shout out you guys, lots of support. We've had a lot of people reaching out, just saying they love the content recently since we've been on our own again. We've also had a lot of people reaching out, asking if they could do things for us, like social media, producing, editing. Someone asked me about writing. I was like, dude, there's no writing that comes from this show. Like, if I could help you, I would. But it's just like, shout out you guys. Like, we definitely want to grow this thing at some point. It's just the two of us.
Yeah.
We're just not spending enough of a profit to bring anyone else on and actually give them anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd feel really bad having you guys do all this work, and we'd be like, hey, so we're not making any money. Thanks. Working for free. Like,
yeah. I mean, resume boosters, like, we got you for that. A couple tweets a night. We'll help you embellish. But just appreciate everyone reaching out. Appreciate everyone liking the content. The views are way up across the board. We're getting as many people watching and listening as we basically ever have, which is crazy because we used to have a multi-billion dollar organization supporting us. Yeah. But again, shout out to you guys. It's been really fun to do, and it's so much better when the Mets are playing well.
And shout out to Brian Metz. We got another review over on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars. Listen, I'll tell you this. The subject could have been better. Among the best Mets podcasts. I would have liked it to say the best Mets podcast, but hey, we'll take it. Brian Metz fan, because you said some nice things. Mark and James blend analytics with a clear passion for this team. Consistently a great listen, especially with the enhanced latitude now that they aren't associated with the organization any longer. Keep up the great work, fellas. Brian, thank you. We appreciate you.
Shout out to you, Brian. And again, anybody, if you put a review on there, any stars, we prefer it to be 5, we will read it. As long as it's not hate speech, we'll read it out there.
But guys, that's going to take us to the end of this episode. Remember to follow us on all our social media at MetsUp on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. If you want to keep interacting with us past the episode, if you want to watch the YouTube video version of this, go to the MetsUp Podcast YouTube channel. Subscribe over there so you don't miss out on any of the content. If you're listening to us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, drop us a rating, drop us a review, download and subscribe. It really does help us grow. Follow James on Twitter at
James_Shiano.
And me at @DraftNickMark with a C. Thank you guys for listening and watching, and we'll catch you after the Dodgers series. Peace out.
Peace out. See you guys next time. Let's go, Mets.